Let's go, girls.
Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson and Molly Vogt. Molly is a former mutual fund consultant and retirement plan specialist who is currently the director and founder of My Purse Politics. Kim served as a city councilwoman, is a former investment broker, and now a successful entrepreneur. Now, let's hear what's hatching in local and national politics with the AmeriChicks. Molly and Kim.
Hey, everybody. This is Molly and Kim, the AmeriChicks. Happy days.
Yes, it's a beautiful day here in Denver, Colorado.
Happy summer, finally.
Yeah, finally.
But don't get so used to it, because I think later this week it's getting cold again, so there you go.
Yeah, it's climate change.
As it always
has. It's called
has.
Weather. It's actually
As
called weather.
As it always has. There you go. We're the AmeriChicks, and we're looking at important issues that need to be on your radar. We dissect issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. And we look for solutions together because, you know, government, they have certain cause. They have a certain purpose. And we've given them certain rights in the Constitution, and we willingly give some of our money to fund that. The rest of the stuff, we think we the people can come up with the answers together. And so that's why we have our program called Hashtag I Am a Movement. And we're asking people if you are smarter than big government. So let's play a game. If you are, let us know. We want to hear your solutions. Our number is 303-632-4160. We also like to share exceptional stories and bring people in that may have, just seen a hard time in life and have a reason to persevere and really work hard. And so we like to share those stories with you because unlike what some people say in the government or even adults that you may know, if I'm talking to the kids out there, you can build that. There, you heard it here first, Denver's Money Talk Radio. And lastly, on Fridays, we do our World War II project. Mm-hmm. We know that the one group that we will never, ever be able to repay is our military veterans. And so we want to share your stories because we know that that's the one way that we can possibly give back is to make sure that your freedom and your sacrifice doesn't go unnoticed by our future generations. We've got to protect ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get started here on a international level. I'm sure everybody is still reeling. The news is still covering the Manchester attack over and over again. It's very, very sad. I hear that it wasn't just the suicide bomber's one-time deal, though. It looks like he's actually tied to other groups. So they are now at a critical status. And they did stop some of his family members. He's not the only one in the family with extremist views, unfortunately, Kim. His father and two brothers also are possibly involved, and they have possibly a new plot for a new attack, and they are tied to Al-Qaeda and ISIS as well.
The bad guys, or as Donald Trump calls them, losers. I love the fact that he's calling them losers because that is exactly what they are. They're cowards and they're losers.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're courageous and you have a disagreement with somebody, you arm yourself up with ideas, with your words, and you come back and you discuss differences. It's okay to have differences. Nobody's ever going to agree with you 100% of your life. Not your spouse, not your best friend, not your president, you know. Be able to use your words to
True.
Argue.
But Molly, the fact that, and this really is terrorism, when people start to rethink about what they're going to do in their lives. And here you've got, I remember taking my kids to, events, concerts. I mean, it was a really great thing. People looked forward to it. And to have these losers actually target little girls is really they're losers. I have to agree with Donald Trump on that.
Yeah. Well, they go into a mass concert like they did, Ariana Grande in Manchester, and they're not going after just Christians or just Buddhists or just Hindus or just Muslims or just women or just men. They're going after everybody. They don't care who you are. It doesn't matter. But the problem is, and the thing that we need to all recognize, that these Islamic terrorists, they want to die. And so when we're going to take them on, we need to make sure that we are calling them what they are. And we're not shutting our eyes to that so that we could put together a strategy to defeat them. Because it's a big it's a big issue that we're seeing around the world.
I just wonder how surprised they are when they find out that the promises that they were given regarding these actions probably didn't really pan out.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah,
could
like
be
when they get to heaven or wherever they go.
Wherever they're headed,
If you haven't seen Robin Williams, he did a stand-up comedy thing, and he was talking about the 47 Virginians rather than the other word they thought they were getting. It's a funny one. Check it out.
Okay.
All right, what else is on your radar?
Well, something interesting on a local level. As you probably know, Boulder passed a soda tax. Interestingly enough, the University of Colorado didn't really come out against it. Come to find out, that's going to cost them about $1 million. They were not thinking they were going to have to pay for it. They were thinking that it was going to be passed on to the vendors.
Oh, no, no. You always raise taxes on other people. You don't raise them on yourself.
Right. And so they have gone and petitioned the city council to pick winners and losers. And so at this particular point in time, Boulder City Council has said, okay, you can study this for a year. And, you know, Molly, it just troubles me when we have elected leaders that decide to pick winners and losers. And I just find it really interesting. And on the other hand, is like, how about free market? How about, you know, we educate kids on what sugary drinks do, what juice does, you know, all these different things. They can make a choice instead of people telling other people what they can eat and drink. I mean, honestly, is this where we are in America now?
Well, it's always going to be a fight that we have, but what would we do if we didn't have anything to fight for?
Well, I tell you what, if this is the thing that people are fighting against, then we're pretty lucky. But unfortunately, there are some other things that we need to fight against. A $20 trillion debt that we're passing on to our kids, this terrorist thing that's going on. You know, we need to get our immigration system in order. I mean, there's a lot of things that we should be focusing on instead of what kind of pop you're drinking.
Yeah, well, just don't come after my soda. All right, so the last thing, and then we'll talk probably a little bit about this more in the second segment because we have a very special guest in studio, and I'm not going to tell you who it is until we get to that second session. But just so that you know, this guy actually started his first business at age 13. He's an entrepreneur.
He's been
going and going and going. He's served publicly. He has served as an entrepreneur. He's created jobs. He's helped to defeat taxes here in Colorado. And he's got some special ideas for solutions that don't have a lot of government involvement. And that's going to be good. And one of the things I'd like to talk to him about when we get back from break is the new health care plan. You know, the House finally passed one. And it took a lot to get that thing passed. And then the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, just came out with their numbers. And thank goodness it passed. It did have enough of a deficit reduction that now it can pass on. But I think the Senate's going to come up with their own plan. If they're just going to hack it, whatever. But as long as I'm seeing them hack on those expenses and lower our cost and give us more options and choices, I think it's a good place to start. Stick with us.
If you like what you're hearing from the Americhicks, Molly and Kim, chances are your future clients do too. Let us help you promote your business and fatten up your wallet. To feature your business on the Americhicks program, email us at americhicks@gmail.com. We feature the most topical news and intriguing guests every weekday during afternoon drive time, 5 to 6 p.m., while you and your clients are enjoying the program on your way home from work. So become a sponsor today by emailing the Americhicks, Molly and Kim, at americhicks@gmail.com. That's the americhicks@gmail.com. Or visit us online at americhicks.com.
Home is where the heart is. It's that safe place where memories are made, meals shared, and holidays celebrated. When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you need to work with RE/MAX award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine has helped individuals navigate the ups and downs of the Denver real estate market for over 28 years. Karen is honest, trustworthy, and has your best interests in mind. Karen takes the time to understand your unique wants and needs and can help you make the best decision for you and your family. Give Karen Levine a call at 303-877-7516 for a no-cost consultation or visit her online at KarenLevine@remax.net and tell her the Americhicks sent you. Every business needs great branding, an effective website, professional photography, and videos to promote their products and services. Normally, businesses have to find numerous providers to handle all this work while incurring substantial costs. That's where Desi On Demand comes in. You choose your budget, and you choose your services from Desi On Demand's menu. Kim Munson here. Molly and I heartily endorse the creativity, innovation, dedication, and integrity that Brand and the founder of Desi and his team bring to the table. Check out Desi On Demand's website at mydesi.com, that's D-E-Z-I, or call 303-359-1255 and tell them the Americhicks sent you.
It's complicated. Life, sometimes. Bookkeeping, sometimes. Taxes, all the stinking time. That's why you need to work with the proven professionals at Predefitch & Company. They offer exceptional services to individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. Serving the South Metro area, the team at Predefitch & Company takes a proactive approach in understanding your tax, accounting, and bookkeeping needs. Tax day's right around the corner, so call the pros at Predefitch & Company today. 303-791-3000 or check out the website at dpredefitch.com. And be sure to tell them the Americhicks sent you.
Hey, welcome back to the Americhicks, Molly and Kim. We are in the second segment, and we are very excited to have Victor Mitchell in studio with us. He is a businessman, and he has been working since the age of 13. He's always worked for himself. He was a newsboy. ended up running a wireless company. Today, he heads Lead Funding, which is a major real estate lender. He did serve in the Colorado House of Representatives. Bless you. Oh, my gosh. And in 2011, he headed the organization Save Colorado Jobs that led the defeat of Prop 103, which was a statewide ballot measure that would have raised income and sales taxes. So we have Woo-hoo. Victor Mitchell in studio with us. Victor, I'm going to ask you the first question is, do you happen to know how much you saved Coloradoans? I'm sure it was a lot. Do you have any idea?
That was in the billions, and that was a number of years ago. But I actually went against the most liberal state senator in Colorado, a guy named Raleigh Heath from Boulder.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We were outspent almost 10 to 1. We ended up winning 70-30. But it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was good, clean debate. We went all around the state. We debated in person. We debated on television. It was terrific.
Well,
I think it was a multi-billion dollar tax increase. It's not as large as the tax increase that's currently being contemplated between the tax and bonding increase that's being contemplated, which is $11 billion. If my memory serves me well, I think it was in the $3 to $5 billion range, the proposed tax in 2011. It's amazing how the Democrats always want more money.
But you know what? I'm even seeing Republicans that are doing that as well. Mm. Molly and I were very involved in House Bill 1242, which was a massive sales tax increase. And I think what's happening now is I think there's been some petitions possibly pulled that they're going to try to get some kind of a tax increase on the ballot here in November. So
that is the rumor. And if not that, a trans bond or one form or another, there's no question. Every time people forget, when you raise somebody's taxes, what you're really doing is you're transferring wealth. You're taking money out of the private sector and you're moving it into government. And once it goes into government,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, yeah, and you know, we found in the past few years that the taxpayers, when they know it's a tax, they say no. And that's why Tabor works so well when we're paying attention to Tabor and sticking within the laws of Tabor, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, is that when we go to a vote of the people and they say, wait, this is going to come out of my money, out of my pocket, this is going to come off my personal income, heck no. But so our state legislature figured out a way to go in and say, we'll just call it a fee. We'll just call it this and this and this and this, and then you won't know, and you won't get a vote to the people. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure the people that we're putting in office understand that when we have money in our pocket, that means more for everybody because we spend more money in the economy, right?
Right, invest. And Molly, Ronald Reagan said that the closest thing to eternal life is a government program.
Yes, because it never, never, never dies.
Yeah. So, well, Victor Mitchell, welcome. It is so great to have you in studio here with Molly and I.
Well, thank you, Kim and Molly. It's terrific to be here, and congratulations on the much success you've had with your show.
Well, thank you. So, what's on your mind?
I was going to talk a little bit about healthcare and share a story that my wife and I experienced last year. Our son is a cadet at West Point, I've got a good wife. I married up, and we were at the, of all places, the Army-Navy game. Army finally beat Navy for the first time in, I guess, about 15 years, and we got in the car. It was one of the coldest days of my life. I couldn't even feel my extremities. We get in the car. We drive some 400 miles south to the Appalachian country. My wife and I have supported this clinic, this unique health clinic, and what they're doing is nothing less than extraordinary. They're run entirely with female nurse practitioners. They don't have any overhead. It's a clinic. They have RVs that go into the communities that are fully equipped, and they don't accept any insurance whatsoever. They charge $10 for a visit, $4 for prescription drugs. They give vouchers out. They mostly get private donations. Their entire budget's $1.5 million, and they serve up to 19,000 people a year. The care is second to none. I mean, they're doing mammograms, colonoscopies, wellness training, mental health screening, because in that part of the country, they have big issues with suicide. It's nothing less than extraordinary, and it really actually made me think, well, as a candidate for governor, which is that these types of things could be brought to Colorado, both in rural communities to help the disenfranchised and the poor, as opposed to a $600 million increase in Medicaid, which we've all witnessed in the last 6 years.
Well, Victor Mitchell, on that, now, did I hear you correctly that this does not receive any government money?
That is correct. The program that we actually witnessed doesn't receive any government money, but it actually could be done with small amounts of block grants. If we could get out of Medicaid, which is crushing people, most people don't understand who have Medicaid today in Colorado, they really can't visit the doctor of their choice because so few doctors accept Medicaid because the reimbursements are so cumbersome, to say the least. So this is a much more efficient way to deal with primary care without the burden of having to pay either a large deductible or for people that don't have insurance. It's very innovative. And the beauty of it is that it can be done so cost effectively.
Now, you said something about that the cost was very low. Does everybody pay? I really think there's some dignity in having some skin in the game. You know, in the old days with the country doctor, you know, he would go, the stories are that he would go and deliver a baby or whatever, and maybe the family couldn't pay. But the next day there was a chicken on the porch, you know, for their dinner. I think that there's dignity.
There's no question. They also have some skin in the game, and every customer or every patient pays $10.
Okay.
And then they get a $4 voucher for a prescription. What's so cool about it, too, is if you have they need specialty care, so say they have diabetes or cancer, they actually use telemedicine, and they link right into the University of Virginia, Charlottesville, and they get a specialist on the line. I mean, when you think about it, what are hospitals' primary role? Hospitals really are – their role is to serve people that have emergency services, life and death issues, and specialty care. But we've seen so many hospitals providing primary care at 10, 20, 50 times the cost of what a nurse practitioner would provide a comparable experience. Many nurse practitioners as well, they'll spend 30, 45 minutes with the patient and get a much better experience for the patient as well.
And what is the – is there a waiting list at these organizations, at these clinics?
No, the clinic we're talking about is called Health Wagon, and there is no they prefer appointments, but you can drop in at any time. They actually take their RVs into the communities. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And they're fully equipped medical RVs, and they're performing every type of service. I mean, it's humbling to watch these women. And what's so exciting about it, they're paying the nurse practitioners over $100,000 a year because all their operational costs is in the nurses. They have basically no overhead, very, very little overhead. They use volunteers for the administrative side of their business. As I said, they get vouchers from pharmaceutical companies for prescriptions. It's a very innovative way to service people with high quality care, both young people who don't necessarily want insurance, but also poor people or lower income people that have a challenge who may have insurance but can't afford the large deductibles under the failed Unaffordable Care Act.
Interesting.
Victor Mitchell, with the Health Wagon, what you have just described, what are the bureaucrats doing?
The bureaucrats hate efficiency and innovation.
Okay.
I mean, the insurance companies, of course. I mean, people don't really understand on the Affordable Care Act, there's really been three big winners. There was the hospitals who've done very well because they get a larger percentage of reimbursements. The pharmaceuticals have increased their profits by about 80% since the Unaffordable Care Act. But the third big winner under the Unaffordable Care Act has been the insurance providers. People don't know that. The industry as a total earned about $8 billion a year. Today it's earning more than $16 billion a year in less than 7-8 years since the law went into effect. So many people have insurance today, but you know, like people that work for me, that they have $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 deductibles, so they can afford their premiums, or their companies are paying for their premiums, but they can't come out of pocket that much because they don't have that much in savings. So effectively, they don't have any insurance at all.
Wow.
Exactly. Well, and that's the big thing, too, is when you mentioned reimbursements, that's a big one for me that I didn't really understand until Dr. Jill Vecchio started talking about it a few years ago under Obamacare. And I said, you know, the government's trying to come up with a solution to this high health care cost. But the deal that nobody seems to know is that government's the reason health care costs so much. And when it really started with Medicare, when they started forcing everybody over the age of 65 onto these government health care programs, and then they weren't reimbursing the doctors as much for the Medicare patients, which means now these patients, 65 and older, aren't getting as good a health care. They're waiting in lines. They're not getting as good a health care as everybody else who's paying more out of pocket and who they're reimbursing more. And then, Victor Mitchell, you also mentioned Medicaid. And as we know, in the past couple of years here in Colorado, I mean, the number of people forced into Medicaid has just skyrocketed because we increased the poverty level of people that would go under Medicaid, I think like 138% or something like that,
so.
If I'm not wrong. But, you know, these people didn't want necessarily to go on Medicaid. And why would you? If they're not reimbursing as much for your health care, you're last on the list. Think about Canada's health care. Yeah, it's free. But if somebody from America or another country goes to Canada and they want to get some health care and they're going to pay with cash, they go in the front of the line. You live there, you're in the back. Your free stuff isn't as good as if you're paying for it. So
liberals always talk about how terrific it is outside the country, but it's one-way traffic. I mean, you have people from Great Britain coming here. You have people from France coming here. You have people from Canada coming here. If you have any kind of a serious illness or major procedure to be done. So we still have the best health care. What's very frustrating to me, and I thought that that absolutely should be done at a legislative level quite easily, is why can't we just have transparency in pricing? Why can't you, when you go to a clinic and say, this is the cash price, this is the insurance price? You know, if you want to get a mammogram, basic procedure done, it's three, four times, you have pricing that's three or four times higher within a 3 or 4 mile radius. You have five different providers providing five different pricing, and the customers, the patients, don't even know it.
Yeah, and there are some groups, some doctor's offices that are kind of going on their own outside of the insurance arena and doing that kind of thing and showing their prices and allowing you to shop around. Somebody that we know, a good friend, Dr. Tusek with Cloud Medical out in Boulder, he's doing that with his group. It's direct pay primary care, and he will actually go out and shop prices for you to make sure he's getting the right price. So I think it's awesome. So we have Victor Mitchell in studio. He's running for governor. Thanks for stepping up to the plate. One more thing on healthcare before we go to break and come back to another topic. What do you think about the new healthcare plan they're putting forward at the federal level?
I'm thrilled if they can get out of the Unaffordable Care Act. I mean, we've had some legislators that haven't been as strong as maybe they could have been in repealing this. But make no mistake about it, this is an A or a B choice. And A is we keep the Unaffordable Care Act, which is failing for most Americans. There's a study recently commenced that one third of Americans who have insurance can't even afford to go to their doctor. Or we plan B, which inevitably the Democrats will claim that every child and poor person is being thrown off of insurance. But I'd much prefer to have a reform proposal that is market-based, where we can start bending the cost curve and provide greater accessibility through things like the Health Wagon, where NGOs and nonprofits can open up these specialized clinics and provide high-quality care without even the need for insurance.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, you know, mentioning just insurance, having insurance the past couple of years hasn't proved to be helpful to many people because the deductible is so high, the out-of-pocket is so high. What good is a piece of paper if it doesn't do me anything? I still can't afford to get my health care. It's not helping me at all. So I need lower costs.
Well, that's really the thing, Molly, is we need to bring down the cost of health care. And health care didn't really go up significantly until government got in the business. And, of course, one of the reasons back, I think it was in the 60s, Victor, you probably know, that businesses started to offer health care was because there were wage and price controls. And so they were trying to figure out a way to get good workers. And so they added that in. Well, now it's become something that's just almost a package when you get a job.
That's true. And they use it, many employers, including my own company, we use it as golden handshakes.
Yep.
Handcuffs to keep key employees there, and you offer health benefits. But right now, the health benefits are, as you touched on, is really elusive for so many people because you have insurance, but many people can't afford the deductibles. I mean, if you look at what happened under the Unaffordable Care Act, so many things have gone wrong. It was sold on a false promise.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this is Denver's Money Talk Radio, KDMT, the Americhicks, Molly and Kim. And we know if you're listening, you care about your money and your wallet, and you want the government out of it. So we're talking about solutions today. And in studio is Victor Mitchell, gubernatorial candidate.
This is Molly with the Americhicks. My friend Susan owns the longest standing drive-in movie theater in Denver, 88 Drive-In. Join them. Spend a beautiful evening under the stars in the privacy of your car or sitting on lawn chairs. Share buttery drive-in popcorn and other goodies with your family and friends. Admission's only $8 per person and children under 12 are free. You cannot beat that one. Now playing The Beauty and the Beast, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and The Fate of the Furious. For the most up-to-date information, like the 88 Drive-In on Facebook or visit the website 88drivein.com.
You know what? Sometimes we go into the voting booth and we pick somebody and then we just say, okay, great. I picked my guy or my gal and hopefully they're just going to make sure that they keep on protecting my wallet because that's what I care about. And then we don't pay attention again until the next go round, and then we're really upset because we didn't really know what that person cared about or thought about or where they came from.
Or what they did.
What they did for a living. You know, and maybe they told you they cared about babies and puppies. But you didn't look at the pictures, and then you see, oh, they didn't really treat those babies and puppies very well before they became, you know, elected into office. So I just wanted to say that we are doing our homework. We have some really awesome candidates running for many different offices here in Colorado, and, you know, we want local control at every level, as far as city council, school board, RTD, state legislature, and then our governorship. And we have somebody in studio here who's running for governor. And he seems to have a very diverse background, which I think would probably cover a lot of the needs of many of the people in the state, because he's an entrepreneur, he's a business owner, he's owned 6 companies, he's been very charitable with his work, he's helped defeat tax increases, which tells me he's on my side when it comes to the financial thing and the proper role of government there, and of course has military in the family, which I respect very much. So without further ado, we are sitting in studio, the Americhicks, Molly and Kim, with Victor Mitchell. And he is throwing his hat out there, taking on one for the team and running for governor. Thank you for doing so.
Oh, it's great. I think it's the most important work I've ever done in my life. I mean, this is actually my 3rd event today. We started the day at 6:30 in the morning in Greeley, and then we went up to Fort Collins. I gave a speech at noon in Fort Collins, and now on your show today, it's a pleasure. Every day I'm listening, I'm learning. I mean, people don't understand how diverse our state is, and including myself. We've been to La Junta, we've been to Crowley, we've been to Huerfano County, small counties, and it's humbling because so many of our parts of our state are not doing as well as they are here in the metro. In fact, Colorado has 5 of the poorest 50 counties in the United States. Most people didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, so we've never had a 64 county economic development strategy coming from the governor's office, where we work directly with town council members and county commissioners and form strategies to bring in private employers into their areas, match that up with infrastructure and community college training, and work together to build. And some of our counties have 85-90% of their workers are work for the government.
Interesting.
Things that make you go, hmm.
Yeah, we kind of like entrepreneurship, you know, at Victor.
So. Definitely, yes. Definitely we do. You know, and I think right now we've been talking a lot about, we've talked a lot to young kids and students and to different groups and just saying, you know, what do you want to do with your future? And some kids do want to go to college and that's their track. And that's, you know, if you want to be a doctor, you want to be a scientist, you know, there's certain things you need to go to college for. But some people don't need to go that way, and it just really depends, and you want to balance out what your goal for a career is and how much you're going to earn and how much that college loan is going to be. So we've talked a lot about vocational schools and different types of trade schools and different opportunities for kids at all levels to really just prepare themselves for what they want to do in their future. There's no cookie cutter answer. Anybody can do anything. You know, we've heard a lot of the government saying they need to get involved in workforce-type programs, but we've heard a lot recently about different private groups that have solutions. And Victor, you had mentioned that you had an idea for something that might help some kids as well in their career market and search. Tell us what you had on your mind as a solution.
Well, there's a couple of things. I wanted to share with your listeners a Keith King story down in Colorado Springs. Keith King was a former state senator, and he's doing something that's basically not being done anywhere in the country. He started a group of charter schools. There's 4 of them in total now. And every kid that goes to any one of Senator King's schools graduates simultaneously with a high school and an associate degree.
Nice.
And most of the associate degrees are all geared towards the vocations, everything from being a plumber to an electrician to being a carpenter and the like. They could also use those credits to cut college costs in half and transfer those credits onto a 4-year university. It's helping a lot of young girls, especially geared towards young girls, mostly at-risk kids. But one of the things we need to really talk about or do a great deal more in Colorado is internships, even at a younger age, especially for girls. And my daughter just graduated from CU. She's an engineer. She came home after her freshman year and said, "Dad, you know, I want to study art history." And I said, "Lauren, that sounds absolutely terrific. The only thing, though, is, you know, you're going to have to pay your own way." All of a sudden, she came around to a better thinking that maybe she wants to take on a different discipline. She ended up finding computer science and math, and the rest has been history. And she became the president of Women in Computing at CU.
Nice.
So that type of mentorship, where a combination of parents' involvement, but with a lot more private employers, encouraging young girls especially to pursue internships, even as early as 8th grade. I know St. Mary's Academy in Cherry Hills is doing a lot of internships with their kids starting in late and middle school all the way through high school. And the same thing applies. I mean, that's the modern economy today. Most modern employers, they want internships before they'll even hire somebody.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you just we're talking with Victor Mitchell, who's running for governor. When it comes to internships today, I'm not sure what's are we legally allowed to pay for internships? Are we and or are we legally allowed to hire people, bring them on as interns, and not pay them so that they just get that credit and that experience? What are the rules on that now? Do you know?
You know, I'm funny you ask me that. I don't know exactly the rules. Our standard as an employer for many years, for decades here in Colorado, has always been we've always paid our interns. Because I think that's just the right thing to do. I mean, people need to be paid. They have costs. It's not free to live. And that's just the way the market works. And you're, and employers derive a benefit, even if it's a marginal benefit, from hiring an intern. But I'm not sure exactly the rules. I think you cannot pay somebody if they're underage. But I think as long as they're of age, which is 15 or 16, they can. And most employers actually do pay a modest amount for their interns.
Okay. You know, Victor Mitchell, I think that one of the things that some of our kids are not coming out with is a work ethic. And I think that it's really more of an educational situation versus an individual decision. I think that some kids, you know, they're taught that they will be getting a certain job at a certain, you know, at a certain salary and that corner office right off the bat.
They're told to expect that.
Yeah. And you know, I come from generations of people that have built things with their hands. And there is real, my understanding is in plumbing and electrical contracting and carpentry and all these things, that there is a dearth of workers. And you can make a good living doing that. And then if you can save and invest, if taxes are low, save and invest. I mean, I know people that have put together, you know, significant wealth by doing that.
There's no question, and there's literally thousands of opportunities like that today in Colorado. The problem is our government has become so overbearing with regulations. Right now, to do most of those types of trades, there's a four-year apprenticeship period, basically 4 years that the kids are going to be making almost nothing. We have to reform that in a state government. We have to do many reforms, regulatory reforms, to get more entrepreneurship, to more animal spirits where people will start businesses, take risks, and that goes to vocational trades as well. A large part of so many kids, especially girls, are not pursuing vocational trades is the long period of the apprenticeship, which I frankly think is just over the top and
right.
Chilling competition
right.
And keeping prices inflated.
You know, we're talking with Victor Mitchell. He is running for governor, and I served on City Council of Lone Tree. And one of the things that I really learned is that we are moving away from representative government to a bureaucratic administrative state. As governor, how could you turn that around?
I'm so glad you asked me. Probably the thing I'm most passionate about is regulatory reform. We have to bring a dozen or so industry experts in. I promise to do exactly that once I swear on the Bible. We'll bring in a dozen or so people that are not going to have a political agenda. I have no interest in running for political office, that are not conflicted out in the industries they're looking at. And we need to do a top-to-bottom review of our whole regulatory schemes and get rid of a great deal of the regulations. We're regulating everything from dog groomers all the way up to doctors.
It's astounding.
We have roughly 3,000 businesses and professions today in Colorado that are now regulated in one form or another. That's up from about 1,200 10 years ago when I was in the legislature. So we're going the wrong direction. We need to have an entrepreneur that can actually get things done. It's not indebted to any special interest groups, and I hope to be that person.
Okay.
Great. Well, we've only got about a minute left. Tell us, Victor Mitchell, how people can get a hold of you, find out more about you, help you, and then kind of just final thoughts.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, it's been so much fun speaking to both of you here today. I mean, it's terrific. And what a great show. Congratulations on the success of your show. Any of your listeners can get a hold of me at any time at vic4gov. That's V-I-C, the number 4gov.com. Or you can like us on Facebook and follow us. We actually do lots of digital. We're doing a real digital first campaign, both grassroots and high tech. People can watch many of our presentations and speeches all around the state live on Facebook. But it's been great being on your show. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that's been just great. So Victor Mitchell, who has thrown his hat in the ring to run for governor. And so it's going to be a very busy, it's a little over a year, isn't it? About 15 months?
Well, I hope it'll go longer than that because I got to win next June the primary. So it's almost like two different races. I got to win the primary and then hopefully take back our governor's mansion. There's only been two Republicans elected in 62 years. So I hope to break the curse.
Well, thank you to you and your family for stepping up, Victor Mitchell.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
We certainly
thank you
guys. Appreciate it. I love that you said regulatory schemes, too, because if you know that they're schemes, then you know that we don't need so many of those, and maybe you'll get in there and rip them out. This is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim on KDMT. Stick with us. We're going to talk about Israel, Palestine, and Trump.
Guy Whidden, 101st Airborne, landed Normandy in the dark on D-Day 1944, was knocked out on the jump, woke up, a gun to his head. What happened next? If you love the AmeriChicks World War II Project on Fridays and know a World War II vet, we'd love to share their story. We're in a race against time to gather as many stories as possible and as quickly as possible to preserve them for all future generations. So if you know a World War II vet or have that great World War II story to share, email us at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. That's the AmeriChicks@gmail.com.
Hey, if you like what you're hearing from the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, chances are your future clients do too. Let us help you promote your business and fatten up your wallet. To feature your business on the AmeriChicks program, email us at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. We feature the most topical news and intriguing guests every weekday during afternoon drive time, 5 to 6 p.m., while you and your clients are enjoying the program on your way home from work. So become a sponsor today by emailing the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. That's the AmeriChicks@gmail.com. Or visit us online at AmeriChicks.com.
Hey, welcome back. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, and it is Wednesday. It is a beautiful day out there, Molly, and we're talking about important issues and dissecting them as right versus wrong instead of right versus left.
Right.
So that was a great interview with Victor Mitchell. We do appreciate people stepping up, and he's running for governor, and it's going to be a very important race here in Colorado.
It sure is. The gubernatorial race is a big one. And, you know, the important thing for us is that we're getting to interview the candidates so that we can find out where they stand on the issues and what they think the proper role of government is. I mean, that's a really big one. Kim, 6 years ago, I wouldn't have even known to think that, to ask those questions. But that's the big one for me. I want to know, what is the issue that you care about? What are the number one, two, three things on your heart? Why do they matter to you? And what's your solution? And give me an issue that's not big government issue. You know, I want to keep my money in my pocket, mm-hmm. and I want your plan to actually help. When we look at the war on poverty that's been going on for the past 60 years, and they're not winning it,
because it's a government program.
As you increase the number of people that are getting food stamps and that are on welfare, then you realize that means you're losing. You're not winning in the programs, not working, and so.
And, you know, expanding the entitlements.
War on drugs, same thing. Your war on drugs isn't working. Are less people on drugs? No. Then why are we pouring more money into the plan that you have in place? I want to hear something different. Mm-hmm. Think outside the box. And that's why I think it's great also for candidates to go around the state or the city or their communities and talk to people about what they care about and what solutions they think would work. Because, you know, people come from different backgrounds. They have different things going on.
Well, one of the things that Victor said that I think is really important, and that is we need to do something regarding regulatory reform. As I'm looking at issues more and more, in fact, I went to a city council meeting last week, which was really nothing more than a rubber stamp of what had been handled from an administrative standpoint and also from a bureaucratic standpoint. And that is not the way it is supposed to be. It is supposed to be a debate. It's supposed to be information that is given to the citizens. Instead, these decisions are being made in rooms with paid unelected officials. And that has just really been the way we've been moving in America. And ultimately, Molly, that is not the way it's supposed to be. The reason that America has been successful is because we have stood on the side of liberty. And liberty is freedom with responsibility. And as we give more and more of that freedom, that responsibility over to bureaucrats and the administrative state, our liberties go away. And when that happens, ultimately, I think we get to a point where we're going to have haves and have-nots mm-hmm. instead of a vibrant middle class.
I agree with you 100%, Kim. And, when you talk about freedom and liberty, that really is our way of life here in America. And
or is it supposed to be?
Supposed to be that way in America. And mm-hmm. it will be again, as long as we remember what it stands for and we talk to our military veterans and ask them, what's going on around the world? What do you see that we need to see? And with that said, I wanted to bring on the air with us Rich Sokol, because he has an event coming up with the Arapahoe County GOP. They have a Lincoln Day dinner coming up, and they've got Mark Oz Geist that's going to be there. And if you don't know that name, he's the Benghazi hero, one of the few that survived that 13 hours, the terrible, terrible, terrible time in Benghazi, Libya, from September 11th to September 12th, 2012. And he is going to be here talking at this event next week. So, Rich, you are running this program. Tell us a little bit about it.
Hey, guys, it's a pleasure to be on with you, and thank you for letting me talk about a true American hero. We have coming up our Lincoln Day dinner for the Arapahoe County Republican Party, and it's very fitting that it's our Lincoln Day dinner, because if you think back to the time of Lincoln, you know, Lincoln fought for the abolition of slavery, and it was the great battle of our time, and unfortunately, there was a lot of violence to settle the issue in the Civil War, and Lincoln ultimately gave his life in that great cause. And there's actually a lot of similarities to today, in that the great battle of our day, I would argue, is the battle against Islamic extremism. And as we saw just the other day in Manchester, unfortunately, a lot of lives are being lost in this battle. But we are honored that there are still some American heroes who are willing to, just like Lincoln, step up and fight the evil when they see it, and fight to protect liberty and fight to protect American lives. And one of those guys is Mark Oz Geist. As you mentioned, he was one of the security guys in the security annex in Benghazi, Libya, that when the embassy was attacked and Ambassador Stevens called over and said, "You guys got to get here or I'm going to die," he and his band actually answered the call. Now, unfortunately, the State Department ordered them to stand down, and that delayed them by 25 minutes. And eventually, after the 25 minutes, they said, "To hell with that," and because true heroes don't stand down, and they made their way over to the compound. And unfortunately, they couldn't save the ambassador's life, but they fought, you know, scores of terrorists for 13 hours and saved many American lives while putting their own lives on the risk. So he's a true American hero. We're honored to have him as our Lincoln Day guest. The dinner's going to be a week from Friday, so that's next Friday, June 2nd. And if anyone wants tickets, they can go to www.arapahorepublicans.org. and get their tickets. I'll just urge your listeners to do it quickly, because we've already sold over 360. The room holds 400, so we're going to sell out.
Wow, that's fantastic.
That's awesome. And that's actually the Radisson Hotel right over here by our studios here in Aurora.
That's right. So we can just sneak right on over there after our show.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so check it out, ArapahoeRepublicans.org, for the Lincoln Day dinner. And then, Rich Sokol, if you don't mind, I'd like to switch gears a little bit. We've only got a couple minutes, but you're a good friend of mine. I've known you for a few years, and I'm curious your thoughts on President Trump's recent meeting in Israel, and the talks that are taking place within you know, Israel and Palestine, and they're saying that they're ready to reach peace. And obviously, the reason I'm talking to you about this, I know that you are Jewish. You lived in Israel when you were in your 20s, and your daughter has a bar mitzvah coming up in Jerusalem this July. So I'm sure this is on your radar. What do you think about what's going on over there?
Well, it sure is on my radar, and it, you know, obviously, it's a situation that I've been following, and I have many family members who live in Israel. So, you know, we always have great hope, but unfortunately, you know, history teaches us not to have too much hope, that, you know, Trump is obviously going to take a crack at trying to be the guy who finally solves the intractable Israeli-Palestinian issue. But my statement has always been that no matter what piece of paper is signed between the parties, until, you know, the average person on the street is ready to give up their guns and ready to stop the hatred and ready to stop the killing, when that happens, there'll be peace. If that doesn't happen, it doesn't matter what any leader says, because there's just too wide a gap between the people on the street, and no piece of paper is going to solve that. You know, as I'm sure you may know, Kim and Molly, the Palestinians today pay the families of terrorists for killing Israelis and Americans. And that's not a misnomer. There's actually a schedule. If a Palestinian terrorist kills somebody, his family gets paid a salary that's greater than the average salary that the Palestinian earns. And in fact, right before Congress now, there's an act called the Taylor Force Act. Taylor Force was an American, a West Point grad, by the way, who was killed in March of last year in Tel Aviv by a Palestinian terrorist. The Palestinian government is paying the murderer's family for the killing of an American. And we here in the United States keep funding the Palestinian Authority and the Palestinians, and that's got to end. And the Taylor Force Act is a piece of legislation that would end all funding, all American taxpayer dollars going to the Palestinians until they stop paying terrorists.
It just seems like common sense. Years ago, Rich, this is Kim, I did a paper. It was a very aggressive paper. I had the Jews and the, at the time, Arabs and their role in the Middle East conflict. And needless to say, I learned a lot. And one of the things that I learned was a quote from Golda Meir, and you could probably help me on this, but it was something along the line that she said, you know, somebody asked her, when will we have peace? When will Israel have peace? And she said, we'll have peace when, in that case, the Arabs love their children more than how they hate us. Is that close to what that quote was or something like that?
Yep. Kim, you're very close. I think a closer quote was, there'll be peace when the Arab mothers love their children more than they hate our children.
Wow. Okay. And that really touched me. I think that that's so important. And hopefully, you know, President Trump is really making a concerted effort to get something done. And I find it just really refreshing.
Well, I think, you know, most Israelis do too. You know, after 8 years of Obama, you know, Trump was welcomed with open arms in Jerusalem. You know, I will caveat by saying, though, he did promise to move the American embassy to Jerusalem, the capital of Israel, and he has since decided that now is not the proper time. So we were disappointed in that.
Yeah.
But my understanding is that he's using that as a negotiating leverage over the Palestinians, saying, hey, if you guys don't come to the table and don't get serious about this, then I will move the embassy. So I'm okay with that.
Okay.
But remember, the Middle East is has been a long period of, you know, Israel has survived five wars of the Arabs attacking Israel. And last time Israel gave up land, which was in the Gaza Strip in 2005, Israel unilaterally pulled out of Gaza and gave it back to the Palestinians. And instead of getting peace, all Israel got was rockets from Hamas aimed at its civilians. So there is a great fear that in any peace agreement, if Israel were to pull back, that the answer wouldn't be peace, but the response would be rockets aimed at Israeli civilians.
Well, and that's been the experience. That's been the experience of what has happened. And, you know, so when that's the case, you have to be very careful about it.
We do. And, you know, we're just glad that, you know, Trump is a breath of fresh air to the Middle East. His new ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, is very much understanding that Israel has historical ties to the West Bank and that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. So after 8 years of Obama trying to separate the United States from Israel, Trump has reaffirmed the ironclad commitment between Israel and the United States and our mutual shared values, which are based upon our, quite honestly, our mutual shared enemy. You know, Israel lives in a dangerous neighborhood. It's not surrounded by Canada and Mexico. It's surrounded by Hamas, Hezbollah, and ISIS. So it's nice that we have an American president who recognizes what Israel's up against and firmly guarantees or supports Israel's right to exist as the Jewish homeland.
It sure does, and it's good that we are allies again and that they're seeing us as much. We're glad to be trusted allies again. Thanks, Rich Sokol. We appreciate you for calling in. Listeners, if you have a chance, go to the Lincoln Day Dinner next Friday night, June 2nd, is it?
I think so.
Okay. Anyway. Okay, great. ArapahoeRepublicans.org for the tickets, and Mark Oz, Geist from Benghazi, will be there. Thanks so much, Rich. Have a good day.
Okay, I'm going to jump in here with our send-off quote. Thomas Jefferson, first inaugural address. He said, a wise and frugal government shall restrain men from injuring one another. He shall leave them otherwise free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall not take from the mouth of labor the bread it has earned. This is the sum of good government.
So protect property only. There you go. This is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, KDMT, signing off. Y'all have a good night. We'll see you tomorrow, 5 p.m. High school.